Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. The playoff week continues as the Pats get set for the Houston Texans divisional playoffs in the AFC coming up this Sunday afternoon at 4:30 Eastern time here at Gillette Stadium. I'm John Rook. PFW's Eric Scalavino is here, a little better for the wear than he was yesterday.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to get better.
I had a couple of folks suggest that your word for the day should have been NyQuil. And suggest
I took,
yesterday that you...
I took
you,
some yesterday.
Did you take some?
And this morning.
Did it help?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't take NyQuil this morning.
Yes, I did.
You took DayQuil.
No, I took NyQuil this morning.
Why? That would kind of drug you out, wouldn't it? Make you sleep.
I'm okay. I'm here. I'm awake.
Okay.
I'm fine. It was effective, though, so
well,
I saw a huge
story on NBC Nightly News last night about how this, you know, flu epidemic is going all over
nationwide.
The country. Yeah, it's a nationwide thing.
And even in China, I think, or around the world, people are getting sick.
Oh, goodness. So, I hope you're on the mend, then. We need to, like, you know, clean these things off.
So you're okay.
No, that's true. All right.
I'm trying to stay away.
Stay away with that. Stay away from that one. Keep that, you know, that
the screen.
Yeah, the mic screen to yourself, oh, right?
Yep.
Spray it down with Lysol, something like that anyway. All right, so... coming up on the program, Eric's here obviously in the opening hour. Hour number two of the program, Mark Vandermeer, who's the Houston Texans radio voice. He joined us 5 weeks ago in advance of the game here. Obviously a great guy. I've known him for a long time and hooked up with him actually that week right before the game, before game time. And he's going to join us in the second hour of the program again today, and we'll get into some of the Houston Texans talk. I asked yesterday... especially later in the show, but I think I did a little of this when you were here in the opening hour yesterday, Eric. I was hoping to hear from some Texans fans and to get their thoughts on what should the Patriots fear? What about your team or what, you know, about the Patriots themselves should the Patriots fear? And I got one response. It got sent to my regular email inbox, which it was kind of strange that somebody would, you know, hunt me down to find me like that. But he did send it to my email inbox. His name is Jack, and I forget what he didn't say where he was from. I just assume he's from Texas because he said he was a Houston fan. And I meant to print out the email, and I forgot to do it. That's just the way things go with me nowadays. You know, I get too, you know, things ahead of myself and forget to do the stuff I'm supposed to do. But I can tell you what it said, and paraphrase here, that he doesn't really think that the Patriots have anything to fear but themselves, which was the
whole
point.
What you said yesterday.
That was my whole basis for the show yesterday.
Yeah.
Patriots should really only fear themselves in this particular instance. And he agreed from a Houston Texans point of view. However, he also, you know, thought that, you know, that there were a couple of key factors that Houston presents that the Patriots should at least concern themselves with. Number one, turnovers, which leads into the whole, hey, you need to take care of your own business. You should fear turnovers because they're the great equalizer and magnified way more than they are in the regular season. Because in the regular season, you have a tendency to blow off turnovers thinking, you know, well, if it costs us a game, so what? We bounce back next week. Can't do that here.
There's no next week
to bounce back from. So your performance must be impeccable. You turn the ball over, there's just not any overcoming it. And I think that's the one thing that can keep Houston in this game is if the Patriots turn it over early. Conversely, if the Texans turn it over, then the Patriots, if they do their job, the game could be a blowout like it was 5 weeks ago. Because if you look at the matchups, and even our friend Jack that took the time to send me the email, he did say, look, you know, on paper, can certainly understand why Patriots fans would be feeling somewhat overconfident. But the one thing that the Texans do have that few teams have at this stage of the game is an outstanding running back. Foster can run the ball. Mm-hmm. The Patriots did a good job of keying on him, and I frankly believe that will be the main key for the Patriots to have success is by keying on Arian Foster. Not only did
they
he
also
rush,
had a good lead.
Well, he had a good lead, yes. Well, they had a lead. Let's put it that way. But he also was targeted 8 times out of the backfield for catches last week, and he caught every one of them. So he had over 170 yards of total offense in rushing and receiving last week. So to that end, the Patriots need to figure out a way then to make sure that if Matt Schaub is going to beat you, he's not going to beat you by handing the ball off or throwing the ball short to Arian Foster. That Schaub needs to beat you down the field if he's going to beat you. And so to me, the primary duty of New England for Sunday is to key on 23. Absolutely shut down 23. In other words, he had, what, 46 yards rushing against the Patriots in the first game?
Yeah, something like that, 45.
All right,
yeah.
He needs to be kept to around that. If he can be, even if he gets up
to tall order,
I realize that. But even if he gets, 75, 80, maybe even 100 yards, if he's kept out of the end zone, that's almost as good as shutting him down, with yardage, as far as I'm concerned. So Foster's got to be the key, because if Foster is having any sort of productivity at all, that makes Schaub's job that much easier. Now, Graham at tight end is certainly an outlet for him. Obviously, we've talked about Johnson as well. There's no question they have weapons. There's no question they have ability. Schaub seems to have faded somewhat in the latter part of the year, and I don't know if that's – I'm wondering if the guy's hurt. I've heard that surmised by a lot of people, and I'm wondering if there might not be something physically wrong with him, because certainly since the Patriot game and maybe even a little bit before – his performance has not been as sharp as it was earlier in the season. Mm. I don't know if, and that's something I hope to ask Mark about, in hour number two of the program today. I mean, what's up with Matt Schaub? Why does he not appear as sharp as he was, say, back in November?
I don't know if he's been listed on the injury report lately.
I haven't seen it. So,
we'll get one today.
We'll finally get
first
one today. So obviously, I think that this game certainly favors New England. It plays in New England's hands. I think that this is a New England matchup bonus here. But it does not mean by any stretch, and for any Houston fans, again, that may be listening today, and by the way, thank you to Jack, because, a lot of times opposing fans who listen to our program here, you're intimidated by the fact that this is Patriots radio. I recognize that. And I recognize your belief that, that's Homer Radio. Well, consider the website that we broadcast.
Not at all, actually.
It's not. In fact, it's anything but. We're certainly slanted toward the Patriots because that's our primary audience.
I get ripped a lot
for being
calling,
a Homer.
Calling out the flaws in this team.
Well, of course. Yeah, because most of the people who do listen to us are dyed-in-the-wool, never-say-die Patriots fans. Mm. And so if you're going to get away with one-sided opinions, you're going to get away with it here. And one of the things that I stressed yesterday, I'm going to stress again today, we try to do in this program is present as balanced a point of view as we can. Because, while some of us may be Patriots fans, we also recognize there's a lot of talent and a lot of ability on the other side. And so we want fans to be able to say as they're watching the game, Eric Scalavino talked about that, or John Rook said that, or, I heard that this week on Patriots radio, where we were talking about trying to break it down. This could happen. Watch for this. And if you hear it, well, just remember where you heard it. And, of course, we have to recognize there are a lot of Patriots fans all over this planet that we live on that don't have the benefit of, regularly listening to Patriots related radio. Even if you stream WEEI, which is our primary radio partner, or stream 98.5 The Sports Hub, which is the flagship for the broadcast, you're not going to get all Patriots all the time.
And when you do, you'll get a lot more favorable viewpoints than you would get probably here.
Probably. Because those guys do wave pom-poms.
Mm.
They do. They absolutely. And it's in their interest to wave pom-poms. And that's the way it is in any market. In Houston, 610, Sports Radio 610, KALT, that's where Mark works or has worked. I know some of the people there very well from my time in Houston radio decades ago. You expect them to be waving the pom-poms for their team because it's in their best interest to gain listenership. I think I appreciate it as a fan listening from the other side if you present the opposing point of view. just to allow me as a listener to be able to make up my own mind, which is the goal.
Right.
I want to be informed. And so that's why we do a practice report. That's why we get opinions. We want educated opinions. And the people that we bring into this show, whether it's you or it's Mark or it's someone like Russell Baxter or whomever on a national basis, and you know, we bring in national guys all the time on this program. I want informed opinions, opinions that I realize that if I listen to this guy or I've heard this guy before, I know he knows what he's talking about. You know, or he does this on an everyday basis, so I trust that opinion. That's what we're looking to do. So it may be slanted, and Jack said yesterday, you know, I wasn't surprised to hear that you're biased. And I'm like, well, bias is a strong word.
It is, yeah.
Bias is a strong word. Slanted, yes. Biased, that insinuates to me that you only listen to one reason.
You're partial.
Yes, and you're partial to somebody. Now, is it in our best interest that the Patriots win the game? Of course it is, because you and I earn paychecks from this team, and we've made no bones about that. We do. I have for a number of years. And so it is very true that, you know, yeah, a part of my living and a huge part of your living is paid by this franchise. But one of the reasons that we took these jobs is the ability to be able to tell the story and to apply some journalistic principle in here. And I'm grateful for the fact that the Patriots let us trust our judgment enough to let us bring both sides of the story to the table in a journalistic sense. So it's fine to take shots. It's fine to take cracks. It's fine to believe whatever you want to believe. It's okay. Because you're going to believe it anyway, no matter what I tell you or what Eric tells you or what Fred says or Andy or Paul or anybody. You're going to believe whatever you want to. You want to call, you know, the BFW guys by and large homers? Fine. This is their job 365 days a year. They cover the Patriots. My job, a little less than that, is to cover the Patriots, but it seems like it's 365 days a year sometime.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, it's fine to look at it. I do wish we had more input from opposing teams' fans every week, and I understand why they would be somewhat intimidated in this forum. And so I'm grateful, and I wanted to speak out to Jack if he's listening today live or if he's listening on the podcast later. I want to let you know that I appreciate that a lot. And I even wrote him a note back. And I said, look, that's great. That's great input. Appreciate that. You know, I wouldn't call it biased. I would call it slanted because you have to consider the audience. And I think most of our fans, Eric, and correct me if I'm wrong here, most of the fans that call into our show here and most of the fans that send us emails and tweets and Facebook posts, they're knowledgeable. And they're knowledgeable not just because they listen to this program on a relatively regular basis, but because they are into following their team. And
no,
so
they get information everywhere.
They get information from more sources than just Patriots.com and Patriots Radio. And because of that, they crave more info. So we're trying to bring that out to them and recognizing that, you know, EEI and 98.5 don't broadcast all Patriots all the time like we do. This is where someone who lives outside of the greater Boston Providence area, this is where you're going to come to get all Patriots all the time. That's what we're supposed to do. It's all about niche broadcasting and that's great. That's why we hear from so many people all over the country. And I'm grateful for it because they can't get this in their own local markets or their own local papers. Now, you can go on the web and you can certainly pick up whatever you want. You can go to Patriots.com and get it. But if you're going to go to Patriots.com, well, why wouldn't you want some good old-fashioned sports talk just like you'd get in your own backyard? But it's all Patriots all the time, or all NFL, all football all the time, just like you would want to hear in your own market. And you can get it right here. And that's why we've done this as we've done it now for, what, 12 years? Yeah, 12 years. I think PFW in Progress started actually in 2000 on a limited basis. Mm-hmm. In 2000.
Seems like forever.
Right. And then we brought in Patriots Playbook in 2001. In the first Super Bowl year, leading up to the first Super Bowl, or the first championship,
I should say. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this, you know, is year number, what is this, 13, right? If you count them all?
If you count them all, yeah.
Yeah, so 1 through 13, 12, so that's 13th year, mm-hmm. 14th year for Patriots.com radio. And I remember back then thinking, oh, this will never work. The first couple of years, it was slim. I mean, it was basically me talking to strippers, and that was about it. Or anybody talking to strippers. I think he was the first person I remember ever getting an email from.
Really?
Exactly. And I think it goes back as far as 01, if I'm not mistaken. Strippers, I know you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the case. And then, you know, as we move on into the 21st century a little bit further, and we turn the corner on the decade, and, you know, we have three Super Bowl championships behind you, people are craving the information. People want to jump on the bandwagon, which is what fans do. And this is why we're here, to take advantage of that. And I think we'd be derelict in our duties as representatives of the team not to try to play to our fans, not to try to play to our listenership and or our readership. People crave information. Here we are. We're going to try to present it to you best way we know how. And so that's kind of where we are. And I'm appreciative of all aspects, all points of view, no matter where you come from, no matter how silly you think it. To me, there is no such thing as a dumb question. The only dumb question, and I tell my journalism students this all the time, the only dumb question is...
the one you don't ask.
Very good. You passed today.
Thank you.
You get an A. There you go. That's my class.
That's it, huh?
Pretty much.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the knock. You know, my kids will tell you, they'll knock and say, Rook's an easy A. Rook's an easy A. No, I wouldn't say that I'm an easy A, but I would tell you, if you just do the work that I have, you know, mm-hmm. prescribed there, you'll do well.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'll say. Just do the work. And that's what anybody's going to ask of you in any walk of life. Do the job. I believe that those three words are somewhere down the hallway. Do your job.
Never assume that you know the answer to a question.
Correct.
Even when you probably do know the answer to the question.
Correct. That's 110% correct.
Because you never know what you're going to get as an answer from the person you're asking.
No question. Absolutely no question about it. All right, let's get to the phones because we've got some guys hanging on here, and let's start it off with our buddy Eldridge in North Carolina. Eldridge, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you today?
I'm doing. How you doing here? I'm doing pretty good.
I'm doing all right. You didn't get that Welcher jersey yet, did you?
No, you ain't sent it yet either.
Damn. Now that mail is really slow. That's ridiculous.
Hey, man, what's going on 3 months?
I don't know what the heck's going on with that post office.
You don't know what that post office is. UPS, one of the two.
Should have gone FedEx.
Yeah, but John,
yes, sir.
I can't get the local market where I stay at, so I have to get it online. So listen to y'all, and I appreciate it very much. But
thank
I'm
you.
Like you, what that caller said, you know, yep. We're talking about just ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, if turnovers, and I saw that game last week with Foster running and catching out the backfield, and I don't think we got any linebackers that could keep up with it, and that would be a big concern. Out the backfield and catch passes. You know, I mean, they might get him down the field, but they ain't gonna stick with it.
Well, here's my observation on trying to defend Foster. First of all, and I don't think we emphasized this really enough 5 weeks ago. You know, Jerod Mayo has obviously a pretty good relationship, or at least did have at one time with Aaron,
yeah,
because
at
they
Tennessee.
Played together at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's already even admitted, and I think he admitted this week in the locker room interviews, that, you know, Foster's a little bit different back now than he was when he was a volunteer.
He's lost a little weight.
A little
bit faster.
He's gained some speed.
He can catch the ball better out of the backfield.
So he has actually improved, which is really what you want. You don't want to be a complete product when you get out of college, because then it's just downhill from there. So I think, in my estimation, Jerod Mayo and the Patriots defense know what they're going to get in Arian Foster. And so because they know what they're going to get from Foster, to me, that's really going to put more pressure on Matt Schaub to be able to connect downfield with somebody, anybody. Because if Foster's the guy, and you know how good the Patriots game plan, you know, Bill Belichick is one of the best in the NFL at taking away a team's primary option. He is. He always has been. And if 23 is going to be their primary option, the only way Houston wins this game is they've got to, you know, I'm going to borrow baseball parlance here. There's got to be a big curveball in there somewhere. So I'm not too worried about Arian Foster, I'll be honest. If Foster comes at the Patriots, Eldridge, with what Foster does best, I'll be surprised, because I think the Patriots will definitely key on him and try to take him out of the game. Now, you remember, he had like 27 yards in his first two carries. One of them, I believe it was the second play, got called back for an illegal procedure, I think it was, or an illegal shift or something in that game back in November, or early December, excuse me. And after that, he was shut down for the rest of the day. They made a quick adjustment on Foster. Boom, it was over. It was over. So I can't, you know, this is the huge chess game right here. Can Houston figure out a way to overcompensate? Can Houston figure out a way to, throw the Patriots that curveball and throw something at New England that they just aren't expecting? And right now, I'm not sure where that's coming from.
You ain't worried about Johnson or?
No, because they targeted Johnson quite a bit, and
he had his catches,
but he didn't hurt them. He did not hurt them. He didn't get behind them. That's where you have to worry. And I think part of the problem here is, can Schaub get him the ball? And I'm really not trying to say anything denigrating toward Matt Schaub. I personally believe the guy is not in his best health based on what I've seen over the last few weeks. And I hope to dig into that a little bit more a little bit later on in the program today. But I don't think he can get him the ball. Now, if he goes over the top and beats him, hats off. And the Patriots had better adjust and had better adjust quickly. I don't think they can. I think they're going to line up, and I think they're certainly going to play eight in a box, not every snap. But I think you'll see them I think this would be a game where I'd be surprised if they played more sub-packages than base. I think you might see the Patriots a little bit more base. I believe they were that way in terms of their base defensive set. I think they played more base snaps against Houston than they have in many other games throughout the course of the year.
Because Houston doesn't do a whole lot that requires
sub-packages. That's correct. You don't see a lot of nickel and a lot of dime against Houston. So I think that's where the Patriots will play straight up. And the only way that Houston can beat this, in my opinion, they've got to throw the curveball. They've got to put the X factor in there. They've got to target somebody that they feel like New England won't expect.
Okay. I agree with that. And I hope Gronk, well, I know he ain't going to be 100%, but a little bit better. And I hope Hernandez don't have them alligator arms like he did the other game.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Patriots were sandbagging a little bit on Gronk last week. He was just out there to get some reps, make a couple of plays, what have you. I think we'll see Gronk unleashed this week.
Man, I hope so.
Okay, one more question. I'm going to let you go.
Go.
What about Dillard and Delete? How are they looking?
What do you think, Harry?
They've been practicing, which is better than the alternative. So, I'll expect them to be limited and questionable when the injury report comes out today and by the end of the week. If it's anything better than that, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
But everybody was out there today.
Everyone was out there
today. Including Justin Francis.
Yes. So we don't really know why he wasn't there yesterday. Who knows? I mean, it's foolish to speculate. But
I got us winning, and we're facing the Ravens in the AFC Championship.
I'm with you.
See?
I am with you.
Eric says the same thing, Eldridge.
Baltimore's going to go there and upset the Broncos, the overrated Broncos in Denver.
That's what I'm thinking. You know, and then we play San Francisco in the Super Bowl.
I can see that. I can see that.
Okay.
All right. Y'all have a good day, man. Nice talking to you.
Take care, Eldridge. Thanks, Eldridge. Appreciate that. Let's go to our friend Olivier in Virginia. Olivier, you're in the playbook.
We want Rook. We want Rook. Did you get your new job yet?
You're preaching to the choir.
nothing yet. I don't think it's quite time for that yet, but I thank you for your sentiments.
Yes, yes. You get the support. The entire Virginian community here is behind you.
Thank you very much. Just make sure the powers that be get that message, too. Yes. I think that would be the only way
Patriots.com, feedback email, front office.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, you know, so who do we have to send an email to?
I just told you. Patriots.com, feedback, emails, and drop-down menu, front office.
Okay. All right. So I didn't hear that.
There you go.
How are you feeling? Are you feeling a little bit better? You sound better than yesterday.
Do I?
Yes.
I'm starting to, I think.
Yeah.
I thought that over the weekend, too, and then I took a turn for the worse on Monday. So I'm hoping that this is the real thing now.
Yeah, I think you're coming back. Coming back to live. Just perfect timing to fight Mr. Shaughnessy and his abomination.
Yeah. How'd you like that? I thought that was, well, frankly, you know, I'm like, you know, I just, you know, you shake my head, but I think it's fun. I think it's kind of neat that he rubs everybody's nose in it and creates controversy. And
I understand that, but here is what I think. I think that we've made a living in the NFL as New England to always respect our, and of course this did not come from the Patriots organization, but still it's associated with us. And the last thing we want to do is to give ammunition and fuel to a team that has been obviously embarrassed a few weeks ago, and to give them needless ammunition to go back and be even more fired up. So I think that what happened is an absolute act of selfishness and poor sportsmanship to try to, you know, to get these guys fired up, and hopefully it doesn't come and bite us in the rear. Because if it does, I think there will be retributions to have in Boston on a media committee for this guy that actually created something that should not have been created in the first place.
Well,
that's,
you know,
my opinion.
Eric said yesterday, and I've been thinking about this since we yesterday's show, and I'm really kind of starting to come to his point of view here, that if you need a newspaper columnist in Boston to get you fired up to play this game, I question your real professionalism.
I don't think they need to be fired up, because I know what happened. They want to, you know, they want to come here and beat us on our term, on their term, actually, to be square with the disappointment they had 5 weeks ago. But why actually do we want to allow the media community to put an additional pressure on ourselves and give them an additional edge? That's kind of why I'm
well, we can't do anything about the media.
Well, yeah, Olivier, I mean, there's freedom of speech.
Right.
I mean, you may disagree completely with what Dan Shaughnessy wrote or with any, mm-hmm. what any other columnist writes or analyst says, but they have a right to say it.
I agree.
And
I
they have a right to sell newspapers.
Yeah, I understand. So, and this was done clearly to sell newspaper and to create,
yeah.
you know, to create, you know, journalism, I guess.
But their job is not to motivate or squash the motivation of professional athletes.
Agreed.
And any professional athlete who uses them for that purpose is engaging in self-defeating actions, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so what I've heard a lot of different comments, a tremendous amount of self-confidence from Patriots Nation and Patriots fans and so forth regarding this game, and that worries me because, and this is not to take away any of Coach Belichick's preparation, mental toughness, and way to manage the team, and also the players to get focused and prepared for this game. But I never like when we are so confident that we think that this is going to be a formality under the pretenses that, you know, if you look at the game yesterday, they showed it again on NFL.com, or NFL channel. It could have gone either way. It was just like a few plays where, you know, if the Texan had recuperated some of the balls, it would have been a very, very close, a closer
sure.
game. So I think this time is going to be very close, and I don't think this is a done deal.
I totally agree. It's going to be a much closer game. It's not going to be a blowout again.
Set in our hands, you know?
Yep. It's not going to be a blowout again. I don't foresee that happening.
I want you guys to listen to this email that I just got. Brian in Essex, Vermont, sent me this. He says, just ran across an article about this on CSNNE, apparently by a writer of the name Sean Daniels at the Galveston Globe. He decided to fire back, Shaughnessy style, an opinion piece, apparently just to...
Globe on Globe crime.
Yeah, I guess Globe on Globe here, just to troll to get clicks. Either way, I'm betting we can expect Belichick and crew to have this on a bulletin board somewhere. Do you think this kind of material is as effective on players as if it were coming from a team? Or do you think it really doesn't matter that any material is good material? Now, consider that question, and I'm going to try to read through this as quickly as I can, but he says, Houston, we have a problem. Needing to buy a Super Bowl ticket problem. The 2012-13 Houston Texans have been waiting all season for this moment, and their master plan has finally fallen into place. Mark it down, gang. February 3, 2013, your Houston Texans are headed to New Orleans. Catch my drift? I mean, seriously, in this business, we call it a lock. We call this destiny. Only road games against the Patriots and Broncos stand between Houston and their first ever Super Bowl appearance. That's right, Texan fans. Do the hokey pokey and turn yourself around, because that's what it's all about. The promised land, isn't it? My point is, there's no chance in hell that the Texans lose to the New Age choke artists on Sunday. The Patriots? Ha! What is this, 2005? Not. The days of New England coming up big when it matters most are over. Anyone can see that. Do you know what I mean? The regular season is well and good, but lately when the Patriots get to the playoffs, they end up going directly to jail. They don't pass go. It's not a race. It's not a chase. They don't hurry up and feed their face. They lose. They lost to the Giants. They lost to the Jets. They lost to the Ravens. They lost to the Giants. They've lost 4 playoff games in the last 5 years, and guess what, folks? They were favored every time. They choked.
I love it.
There you go. And I won't read the rest of it, because the rest of it's kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But that's
you
what
know,
he wrote.
You know, the good news is that if there is one coach in the NFL that has a proven, you know, record to use inflammatory type of inflammation like this, it's really Coach Belichick. So that's great that we have it. He's going to use it. I'm not sure if the coach from the Texans would actually use it. And I don't know if it's the case because I don't really know him and I don't really spend enough time to read about his psyche and his process as a coach. But I think it's good that we're getting some information like this that Coach Belichick can use to motivate the troops.
Well, I don't know actually if he'll even if anybody will even bother to show this to him. I'll be honest with you. I
never heard of the Galveston Globe.
Yeah, it's a small. I think it's even a weekly in Galveston, Texas, which is about an hour south of Houston, right on the coast. So I can only tell you that if it were a player or a coach,
different story.
It's a different story
completely.
But as a columnist, I don't think that's going to get a rise out of anybody around here.
Yeah. I understand. Well, listen, I just wanted to call and wish you, Eric, a
speedy recovery,
prompt improvement on your health.
Thank you.
And John, I will do what Eric recommended. I will write a missive back to the home office.
A missive. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Olivier. Well, coming from you, I'm sure it'll be respected because you're a good fan.
Thank you, and I can't wait for the word of the day. See you guys.
Take care. Bye-bye. You got it. That's still to come.
Yep.
See, you've got people looking forward to that every day.
Good.
Now. Every show.
Glad.
Word of the day. See, we're trying to elevate the intelligence level of our audience.
And exactly. There's enough dumbing down in this world. We need to
lift
people up.
And if someone who apparently is as smart a guy as Olivier is, and he can't wait for the word of the day, what does that say about the overall?
I'm humbled.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
I am.
I think that's great. All right, here's Melvin in Tennessee. Melvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Excellent, Melvin.
No problem. I'm almost still thinking about that that comment that you just said. That's almost funny to me. You know, it means it's 2005 and all stuff that the veterans have left that team and we've already had a turnover. So I mean, it's a new team, but I would definitely not call this team, you know, a choke artist. You know, I think that it's just a young team and they're trying to just prove themselves postseason wise, and you just can't do it, you know, just that quickly. But it's like most people, that you know, just to disregard all wins and then just focus on losses. Just to, you know, I think that a lot of teams, a lot of people do that. Just like you were previously saying that. That's why I stopped listening to ESPN because a lot of people that are on ESPN, it seems like they have their own personal grudges that they're just, you know, emphasizing on national TV, and it's really just embarrassing themselves and letting everybody know that they never got over those old losses. You know, it's just stupid.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, and that we did get into that on ESPN a little bit yesterday. Let me read a couple of more phrases here now that I've got a chance to do it from this guy's column. Again, this is from Sean Daniels of the Galveston Globe. He says here, okay.
Wait a minute. What's the guy's name?
Sean Daniels.
So we have Dan Shaughnessy from the Boston Globe.
This guy's name is Sean Daniels.
Daniels from the Galveston Globe.
That's what it says.
Wow.
S-H-A-U-G-H-N. You can follow him on Twitter, at S-H-A-U-G-H-N Daniels, Sean Daniels.
That's almost, that's eerie.
That has to be somebody, to be somebody spoofing.
It has to be, right? I can't believe that this is legitimate.
Has to be somebody spoofing. Anyway, he goes on to say, okay, that means they will choke again. You dig? You don't need a PhD from Rice to know how predictable sports are, and this one is about as predictable as they come. The Pats don't have a chance. You feel me? It's that easy. NFL playoffs, Texans are going to win. First of all, because Bill Belichick is one of the most fraudulent coaches in NFL history. Let's see how he would have done with David Carr under center, right? I mean, did you see what happened the one year he didn't have Brady? He didn't even make the playoffs. Fraud. Oh,
we're
yeah.
11 and 5. What are you talking about?
I know, but you didn't make the playoffs. I understand that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Can this guy even coach defense anymore? Have you even seen the Patriots D this year? I know I haven't. Confession, I fell asleep in the first quarter of that Monday nighter. Still, New England's defense is weaker than a one-sentence paragraph, more useless than a rhetorical question. Seriously, can you imagine anything worse than the Patriots' secondary? Maybe Stephen Ridley, or as I call him, Mr. Dropsies. Ridley fumbles every single game. He'll obviously fumble on Sunday. And when he does, I guarantee the Texans recover. This time, I guarantee it's going to be different. There's no way that the Patriots can contain Arian Foster and J.J. Watt again. It's literally impossible. The Pats won't know what hit them. They know they got lucky last time. We all know they did. This is the matchup the Texans have been waiting for. This is how it was always supposed to go. Lose to the Pats, then keep losing. Just enough to guarantee a rematch and lure them into a false sense of security. It's the same move the Jets pulled 2 years ago, and you saw how well that worked. This is the exact same thing. The Texans have spent the last month playing dead in the weeds while the fraudulent Patriots, who haven't won a Super Bowl in 8 years and have a quarterback who's getting older and slower and less effective every week, have predictably spent the time building up false expectations. Am I the only one who sees this? Of course not.
Probably are.
That's actually quite entertaining, to be quite honest with you.
That is ridiculous. This half of Houston Texans defense, they only had 42 points, 28 and a quarter almost, seemed like.
I know.
Everybody was asleep.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, this is the playoffs now. You're not playing the old Colts and the Titans and the Jaguars anymore. These are real teams.
True.
But, yeah, I mean, come on. That's how you get out of those stats. But anyway.
Just 1 second, Melvin.
Okay.
Something tells me that this Sean Daniels doesn't really exist.
I was just going to say that. I
pulled up the name
on
Twitter.
Yep.
And his bio says, columnist for the Galveston Globe, likes fishing, softball, philosophy, dislikes chick flicks, egg whites, personal motto, look at me. 98 followers.
Somebody's created the anti-Dan Shaughnessy.
Following 12.
I wonder if this is Dan Shaughnessy.
I don't know, but there's a picture.
Is there a picture of the guy?
There's a picture. So
that's him?
Yeah.
What's the handle?
S-H-A-U-G-N.
Yeah, that's the satirical anti... That's
the anti-Shaughnessy. Okay.
That's a satirical thing.
So some guy who's... You think it could even be Dan, couldn't it? Could be Shaughnessy, right?
I think it's some guy in Houston.
It's someone from there.
I think Patrick and Rich picked up on it earlier and did something with it.
Nice.
All right. All right, so my red flag raising was warranted. Then.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it's actually pretty entertaining, to be quite honest with you. I don't think anything about it at all. I don't think this guy's for real.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry, Melvin.
Okay, no problem. I'm just asking a question that actually makes sense here. But when you all see the speaking of Patriots, do you all think that they play better? I liked them when they played to Miami. Well, once they played them, they played a little bit more aggressively. Maybe it's man to man, maybe bump and run a little bit more than when they played the those like a cover four, almost like a soft cover four defense. Do you all think they're more effective when they play man to man versus like the zone? Although I know they're a zone team, but do you all think that you know it just looks better, it seems to flow better, they look more. I thought they kind of lined up to the line, spread it out. You didn't know who was coming, who wasn't. It was kind of it was confusing me. I know it confused Miami on some games. It seems like they approach some teams like that, but do y'all think they're more aggressive or better once they play man-to-man? I've heard this a lot, but I want to see y'all's opinion about it.
Maybe a little bit, but they're still not that great. You know, I still don't have a whole lot of confidence in them And I know what the argument is going to be from the other side. It's that, they create the turnovers when they need to. Okay, but this is the time of year when you need to get those turnovers more, as John was saying, than at any point in the year. They need to continue to do that because I don't think they can rely on just their talent alone. I don't think they have enough of it.
I've always thought that they were way too soft in their whatever press man coverage they were using. They were way too soft in it. We saw that earlier in the year and they got burnt.
Yeah,
and I think that's one of the reasons why we saw them move more to a zone and to playing nickel and dime packages, sub packages more early in the year than they were playing their base defense. I think to answer your question in short, Melvin, they're better at man, but now that they've got McCourty back playing some free safety, quite honestly, I'd love to see them switch it up. I want to see them dictate to the other team. I want to see them go man, and then I want to see them throw in some cover two or some cover four and cause the other team to stop and think, because that's when mistakes happen by the other side.
Right. I just always thought that the zone, I know, especially watching last year, that was more for injuries. It seemed like DBs were getting injured. They started to put more people in just to substitute. But, you know, I just always liked it. I don't like this team. I really don't like any other teams. But whenever Pittsburgh lines up and plays, I notice they like to. Have you ever noticed that if you ever watch them play, they like to, whatever the offense is doing, they come in and they come out and they spread around. I mean, a lot of teams do this. Sometimes the Jets do. But you make the offense also respond to what the defense is doing. And I feel like we just sit back there and sometimes wait for them just to, you know, come at us. Whatever we're going to call, we're going to call. But, you know, we really don't have anything that, any packages or formations that I've seen a lot of times that really makes our offense. Now you switch up according to what we're doing. You might have this corner blitz, or you might have a free safety maybe come up a lot blitz and possibly blitz, but we just, I don't know. I think sometimes we play a little bit too soft.
Yeah, no, I agree, but, and I think it's because they don't have the guys to do it like they used to. You know, they used to have guys like Brewski, Vrabel, McGinnis, Law, Harrison, guys who could do those things. Now I think they have to be more read and react.
Yeah.
Just because they don't.
So you even think with the addition to Sleeve or whatever.
Yeah.
That product, it just not. It's,
yeah,
not,
I mean, Sleeve, he's not Darrell Revis.
No,
yeah.
He's not.
You know, I mean, let's not make him out to be something he's not. He's okay. He's better than what they had, but he's still not. He's still not
what
great.
You would call. He's not what I think anybody here would call a shutdown corner.
No,
he's a good corner, but there's only can you name the shutdown corners in this league? Probably, and there's not very many of them, and he's not one of them. But that doesn't mean that he's not in that next level of player, and that's probably about where he is. And because of the way that the Patriots now mix and match the personnel in the secondary, it's always great when you can get a shutdown corner. I don't think those guys really exist, but okay. Okay, if you can find one, and even if you don't, I think the Patriots are adequate. I don't think they're great. I think they're adequate. And if they get rush, then they become even better.
Okay, well, I guess the only thing I could be nervous about coming up this game is a lot of passing, dump overs up the middle, you know, spikes coming in. Also having to be concerned with Foster, and Dennis probably free up a tight end over the middle. I think if I was Houston, so to speak, that's why I'm going to try to attack New England and then try to get to the running game. But if they're not going to change up and they're going to kind of play into, I wouldn't say play into New England fans, if they get to stopping the run again, I think they're dead meat. I mean, I don't think that you know, that, like I said, throughout this whole year, I've never seen them line up with five wide receivers and just feel like shredding the defense with shot. I don't think he's capable of doing it. So, you said shut Foster down,
okay,
and stop that play action.
Yep.
I think they're done.
I don't think there's any question about it. That's the key. That's still the key. And
right.
Until the Texans show you something different, you can shut him down, then you're effectively going to take away play action, and then you make them very predictable, and then you can sit back in that secondary, and you know what's coming at you.
Right. They'll be down 30 points and still run the ball. So.
Well, that's part of the problem, and I think it's important, very important for the Patriots, you know, to put the Texans in a 10-0 or 14-0 hole fairly quickly. If they do, then I don't see the Texans coming back from that. The other way around, well, then you're going to get some doubt, and I think the Patriots can come back, but they're going to have to make sure that they avoid mistakes.
Right, right. Okay, well, enjoy the show, man. I'll talk to you all later.
Thanks, Melvin. Appreciate that. Let me get a couple of tweets in here just because I had so many people send them yesterday. Gabe says, are you concerned with the health of the Patriots secondary and how they will match a team's wide receivers, such as Denver's duo? Well, frankly, no. I didn't really want to do this. I didn't really want to go and even mention Denver this week at all. Not so much out of respect for Houston, but because I think that's just bad karma.
I agree with you.
You know? So, Gabe,
especially since they're not going to win the game.
Yeah, well, it's true. That's also true. I mean, Denver still has to win a game, win a home game as well. I think that it's more likely that you see the road teams have a chance to upset in the NFC than you do in the AFC this week, and that seems to be a consensus that I'm getting from a lot of, you know, my, you know, counterparts and people that I actually know in this business around the league and the various networks and such, but I wouldn't count it completely out. Rashad sends this. He says, why hasn't anyone said anything about Brady breaking the record for most postseason wins by a quarterback if he wins on Sunday?
He was asked about that today and kind of blew it off, as you might expect, because it's a team game. I don't win games. We win them as a team. So, you know, we're just focused on preparing for the Texans, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. No big deal.
No big deal.
No.
For those that don't know, if Tom wins,
I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but I'm saying that's how they treat those kind of things in public.
In public.
Behind the scenes, they take it very seriously.
I'm sure they do.
Because
this team is all about creating legacy.
Oh, absolutely. And don't think personal records don't mean anything, because if they didn't,
that's why guys play the game.
If they didn't, Vinny Testaverde would not have been put in against Tennessee in 2006 to throw a touchdown pass.
Well, Doug Flutie wouldn't have dropped the extra point in his last play as a professional.
Exactly. They know exactly what personal records are, what they mean, and they will fight for them. But they'll never tell you that in public.
Right. That's absolutely correct. By the way, if you want to send a tweet, at JR Broadcaster is the Twitter address. Thanks for those. Oh, here's one from, the Twitter handle is at Robinson.
Oh, that's Lucky.
Oh, is that Lucky?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He says, Eric didn't foresee the Patriots winning the first game either. You didn't. You had the Texans winning it.
I had them winning
it,
yeah.
Yeah. So, what has changed in your estimation, and looking at it from your point of view, from now as compared to 5 weeks ago?
Well, 5 weeks ago, I thought the Texans would win, get the number one seed, and be playing at home. None of those things happened. So, a lot's changed. The Texans have played some bad football down the stretch. They're coming back here on the road. But I do think they're going to play better, because I don't think they could have played much worse the last game.
Okay.
And they have some injured guys that weren't in that game coming back. New England has Rob Gronkowski, who didn't play in that game, coming back. So, I think it's going to be a tougher battle than I think people are giving Houston credit for.
Okay. Michael says, I listen to a variety of radio and TV shows to get a lot of information. This is on Facebook. And I then make up my own viewpoint. Then I ask a question or make a comment that I would like answered and or would like to put forward to others. I agree that Foster is a very important focal point. The Patriots also need to watch out the defensive front of Houston. That's something else that Tom Brady addressed as well. I guess the tennis rackets are back out again, right?
Yep.
And to assimilate J.J. Watt and his long reach coming in from the defensive end, right?
Mm-hmm. The SWAT, J.J. SWAT,
SWATs,
what they call it, yeah.
J.J. SWAT.
And we've seen them do that in training camp, too, with they do that sometimes just to, as a drill. They use them with the wide receivers, too, to sort of simulate the arms of defensive linemen at the line of scrimmage and being able to focus on the ball coming through that jungle of arms so that the receiver doesn't get, you know, thrown off by all of this movement at the line of scrimmage.
Right, right, right.
So... but yeah, Watt is, he's probably the best defensive player in the NFL right now. And they're going to face him again for the second time in a month. It worked the last time what they did to prepare, so they're doing it again, I guess.
Axel on Facebook says, hi, John, Eric, and Kevin in the booth. It's been some time since I wrote in last. I had my heart broken by LSU, and they allowed Alabama to score on the last drive of the game. Now when the college season is over and Alabama won again, I ask myself, what might have happened if LSU had won that game? Would they have managed to bring the national title back to Baton Rouge? Anyways, I'd like to say the Pats' biggest fear should be Watt. What if he beats the crap out of Brady? Will the Pats be able to win on Sunday if Brady's sacked five times or more?
I doubt it. If it's
if
that
they get
high,
to him five times,
that'd be pretty hard.
It's going to be a tough day. Tough day. Says, Eric, I think I heard that you are going to Africa.
Yes.
I'd like to know where you are going, because I was in South Africa for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm going to East Africa, Kenya and Tanzania specifically. And
are you sure the sickness that you're having isn't a result of all the shots you've had to take?
I'm kind of thinking that that's exactly what it was, John.
That's for you, by
I
the
know,
way.
I
That's what you're going to hear when you camp out on those tents.
Yeah, and probably a little bit more, too. Like lions
Get ready,
growling.
Tanzania. Here comes E-Scal, baby!
won't be able to tweet from out there, I don't think, though. So
I don't think there'll be no tweeting from the bush.
I don't think there'll be tweeting from the bush.
no tweeting from the bush? Damn. I'd love to get a Twitter from the middle of Africa. That'd be great.
I'd love to send you one, but I don't know if I'll be able to get a signal from out there. I think that... I think you're onto something. I think my immune system was really severely weakened by all those shots I had to get. And, just the, you know, bad timing. But I had to do it.
Yeah.
I had to do it.
Says, I know that we should wait with the draft talk for another month because I'm a blind fan, and as a fan, I believe the Pats will win the Super Bowl every year. But what do you think of former LSU stars Tyrann Mathieu and Barkevious Mingo? Well, Mathieu, of course, is the a.k.a. Honey Badger. Mm. Clearly, he'd be a tremendous talent. And the Patriots do have a recent record of taking a shot at some guys that have, you know, questionable off-field traits. I don't think he lasts.
First-round pick, probably, though.
Yeah, I don't think he lasts until the Patriots will pick.
No, and I don't think they would. I mean, it's way too early to
start
thinking
about
the draft.
What about a guy like Mingo?
Honestly, John, I haven't done enough.
Yeah,
I haven't done any work really on the draft.
We'd have to look at that. Actually, we'll revisit.
Plenty
that.
Of time to talk about
yeah,
that when the
I
season
think,
ends.
Yeah, we'll try to revisit that. Let's go to back to the phones. Alvin in Texas. Alvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John and Eric, I got one word on calling the word of the day is preamble of the game. Have you ever heard that one?
And that's not one word, buddy. That's three.
No, but have you ever heard preamble?
Yeah, heard it a bunch of times.
Yeah, from the PFW. Well, the thing that I'm just wondering, like, then do you think back then, like on October, Brian Cushion, he got injured and then he started saying that they were going to go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And I just said, I doubt that they're going to go. And
well, you know, you have to say, Alvin, though, that, you know, before the Texans got hurt, and they have had their share of injuries, especially in the middle of that defense, that they, when they were rolling along, they looked as strong as anybody in the league. But the true measure of a team here, and this happens to every team, whether you're good or you're bad, you're going to go through injuries over the point of a 17-week season. And the teams that are left standing at the end are the ones that are best equipped to handle the long haul with their depth. I will make no argument that Houston is probably from, in terms of their starters, one of the best teams in the NFL. It's their depth that probably leaves them lacking a little bit. The Patriots have more depth, and I think we'll find out this week ultimately if they have better depth than Houston.
What did you think about the comments of Scott Stolik, former backup quarterback for the Patriots, when he said the Texans are fraud?
Oh, you know, well, I mean, he's a radio talk show host, too, as well as, you know, as an analyst on, you know, during the game broadcast. So he's certainly entitled to his opinion. If he thinks the Texans are frauds, that's fine. But, you know, I think most people, he's doing that just to create a rise out of his listeners. And he's playing largely to a pro-Patriots audience. So, you know, if you have to look, you have to look at things somewhat in perspective of where they're coming from. And he's doing that for one reason, and that's to drive listeners and phone callers, and I don't truly think that anybody who's played the game as he has, I don't really think they think that.
Yeah, well, like, I say it's not going to be a blow-up, but I think the Patriots will win by 10. And, like, basically, you know, once the Patriots go up, you know, like, they fall apart to Texas. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think 10 is probably about the right number. I will probably formulate that a little bit more carefully tomorrow. And Alvin, you can do the same with your prediction. All right, E, before we let you go here, was there anything we missed from practice today we need to know about?
Not really. I mean, everybody was there.
So
it was perfect.
It was a good day, right?
It was a good day.
Okay.
The owner even made an appearance.
The owner made an appearance today. Well, that's big time of Mr.
Very
Kraft
rare
gets
during
there.
The season.
Yeah.
To make an
especially out
practice.
On the practice field, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Training camp, it's kind of a regular thing.
Yes,
but.
You see him out there quite a bit.
Faith and democracy.
Yep.
Yeah. But any thoughts behind why he'd be
well,
out there
he had
for
a couple of gentlemen with him, guests. Okay. So I think he was probably just
showing off possession.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is my football team.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, why not?
If I was,
I would do it too. Sure,
I would do it too. Hey, you want to come down and see my football team
right.
practice? Why not? It's what we do.
Sure.
All right. All right. Before then, we wrap up the opening hour of the program today. We do have one bit of business to get to.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages,
Olivia's favorite
it's time
moment.
To pull up your britches,
pay attention.
Put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather around the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
And today's word is?
Zarek.
Zarek, is that like your name with a Z on it?
X. X-E-R-I-C.
X-E-R-I-C.
Yes.
Zarek.
Zarek.
Okay.
Which is an adjective. It's describing an environment that is severely lacking in moisture or water. In other words, a very dry place, which is kind of like my sinuses
your
are.
Your sinuses now and where you're headed next month, the end of next month.
Exactly.
A very Zarek
a very
region.
Normally Zarek region of the
of
planet.
The globe, of the planet, is where Eric Scalavino is working.
Yes.
Eric is headed to Zarek.
Zarek land. Yeah.
Zarek land.
How do you like
See,
that?
We coin our own phrases here on Patriots Playbook.
Mm-hmm.
All right. X-E-R-I-C, a very Zarek part of the globe.
Yes.
Okay. Is that going to also be an adjective to describe the Houston Texans end zone this weekend?
No, I think they're going to put up a fight. I really do.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So you don't quite like them as much as you did in December.
No.
But
I think they're going to play better than they did in December.
Okay. Can the Patriots play as well as they did in December? Maybe that's the biggest
factor. No, because they had everything go their way. Everything go their way. And I can't see that happening again, but I think they will do enough.
All right, we'll let you save your prediction
for tomorrow.
All right, good stuff. All right, that ends the first hour of the program. Al, hang on to the phone if you can for a bit. We'll come to you in just a couple of moments. Hour number two of the playbook featuring Mark Vandermeer, voice of the Houston Texans, coming up.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Turanza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock right now. We have Bridgestone tires in stock no matter what you drive. Remember that we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance. With over 100 ASE-certified master technicians on our staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment. Plus, you'll find easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out our everyday low prices now on Bridgestone Tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. We're always here to get you there.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of a smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Pfft, rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
John Rook with you on Patriots.com Radio and Inside the Playbook for a Wednesday in 15 minutes. It'll be Mark Vandermeer at Texans Voice. He's the play-by-play radio voice for the Houston Texans, but at Texans Voice is where you can follow him on Twitter. Of course, you can follow us here on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster is the Twitter address, John.Rook on Facebook, the email address, webradio@patriots.com, the telephone number, the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. That's where we find our good friend Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Thanks for hanging on, Al.
No problem there, John Rook. Hey, look, I really only called to let you know that I did managed to punch up that rant that you referred to me yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Bob
Valvano.
Bob Valvano, yes.
Right, yeah.
And, it was terrific, first of all. And by definition, I suppose, because something is a rant, there's a certain amount of digression and kind of a little bit of rambling here and there, and you have to kind of break the code a little bit. But basically, he seemed to make two basic points, which is, number one, a certain amount of vanity in, the Kirk Herb streets of the world that can't admit that they were wrong about something, and that's just kind of a personal thing that, I guess anybody that's predicted a game wrong, at some point will, try to come up with an excuse.
Sure.
As to why they picked the game wrong. But beyond that, the larger thing was, I think, what you mentioned yesterday as well, which is the whole vested interest argument, and I don't want to replow everything that we talked about yesterday, but one thing I would just add to that would be, obviously if you're ESPN and you know that Florida is going to be on your schedule pretty much every year, a certain number of times, then you want Florida to be ranked so you can hype that game up.
Yeah,
and
right.
Certainly you don't want to diminish Florida's preseason ranking, going into next year. So, you can't say that they just played a sucky game or they got outplayed by little old Louisville.
Yeah, that's the whole point. They should
right.
say that. But
right.
they don't because
they
they're trying to protect their overall best interest. And to
Cha-ching.
Me, and
yes.
that's and it's
yes.
so blatantly obvious. Most
it
everybody
is.
Sees it, and yet everybody at ESPN always treats it like, "Oh, well, wink wink, nudge nudge." Know what I mean? yes, and that's just it. We know exactly what it is that you mean, and it's getting sickening. And I think this is the problem that people have with almost anything that ESPN does nowadays. They've
yep.
lost journalistic credibility, and
yep.
and this is where I really feel good about the Fifth Estate, the industry of journalism,
right.
in other words, in this country, is
okay.
that we're smart. The consuming public is a smart consuming public. And
uh-huh.
so we're to the point now where it's like we don't believe ESPN because
right.
the crap that you're feeding us is self-serving. ESPN thinks we're all a bunch of idiots. And
well,
we're not. And so this is why I still have faith in the educated sports fan, because we're not going to take that crap, and we are going to go out there and we're going to try to find an educated opinion, and we want someone to tell us what it is that we just saw without making up friggin' excuses, which is what ESPN does more often than they don't. Now, not everybody.
Right.
I'm not going to throw everybody under the bus, okay?
Right.
Because
right.
not everybody at ESPN is like that. I still have some good friends in those buildings.
right.
and work for that network. And some
right.
of them are very, very good at what they do, and they do take their journalism seriously. But their credibility is harmed as a journalist because of what some of the knuckleheads do on that empire,
so
if you will.
It's so true.
To get noticed. And so this is why I think now, more so than ever, and I pray that this works, that
right.
NBC Sports Network, that CBS Sports Network,
right.
and very soon to launch Fox Sports Network.
There you go.
That they
a little
all,
bit of competition, never
exactly,
heard anybody.
We've needed this for a long time. Fox tried to do this a few years ago before they were really ready to do it, and it failed. Mm-hmm. And now I think we're at the point where people are kind of like, oh, got to watch SportsCenter. I have to watch ESPN. I wish I didn't have to because those guys are all full of crap.
Well, let me put it to you this way, John Rook, and see how you – let me bounce this off you. Again, you and I are about the same age, so
we
share a lot of perspectives that
yep.
are probably the same. And, my recollection is when the U.S. Air Force first sent me here to good old Valdosta, Georgia, before I went away to Europe for 15 or 16 years, I came down here right when ESPN started.
Wow.
And, I remember when we first got cable here in Valdosta, it was a big deal. Yeah. And we had ESPN. Wow. Just like the big boys. And, when they started, it was basically, there was something called sports, you
mm-hmm.
see.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly over the years, there's something else that's called sports marketing.
True.
And, and sometimes it's kind of a fine line there. You can't really always tell when the sports ends and the sports marketing begins, And, I think you see it a lot, especially in big time college football, where we're really, Bob Valvano said
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
on his rant, they have the sacred cows, they have the designated big time programs that have to be good every year, no matter who they lose to, no matter who deserves that shot at them or whatever, they've got those people that they hype up. And, last observation, and I'll let you go. A lot of people like to point fingers at the NFL because they divide their money up more or less equally,
mm-hmm.
and everybody more or less is operating with the same, bag of money. And, if you really wanted to be some sort of an economic purist, you could say, well, that's socialism.
Right.
That's they're practicing socialism. Well, I've never bought into that. There's one champion in the National Football League. If there was no champion, then I might go along with that. But what I think the NFL is about is competition, and then we see who the champion is at the end. Okay,
right.
And I don't have any problem with that. I don't call that socialism. I call that competition. Now, what I do kind of call socialism is big time college football.
Yeah.
Because they've got to have, at the end of the year, out of 120 teams, they've got to have about 50 or 60 champions. Everybody's got to be a champion. Oh, we got 30 bowl champions and all the division champions and all the conference champions. And we're struggling. Like, it's like pulling teeth to get them to commit to a national champion,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I guess we're closer than we used to be, but we need to still get a little bit closer. But it just seems like that they have this everybody's got to get a trophy attitude in college football.
Yeah.
They would never admit it. But they're the closest thing to socialism that there is in sports.
I know.
Is right there in the big time thing. And so, God forbid, Louisville come in and upset the apple cart by, winning the wrong game. And who knows? They might actually have to pay attention to him again next year if this kid actually makes a run at the Heisman. Because he is going to come back, and there'll be a certain amount of hype with that. So,
yes, correct.
If you do their games again next year, John, hey, just call them like you see them. What can I say?
I'm going to try to do that exactly.
I'll tune in if I can. I guess the Big East games are on the internet or something.
Yeah,
I'll find them somewhere.
They are. They're there.
You bet,
there.
Babe. Have a great day.
Thanks, Big Al.
All right.
All right, Alan Valdosta, Georgia. Let me get a couple of Facebook posts in here. Our friend Tim says, in defense of the draft question, came up earlier from Axel, I think, on Facebook, if the powers that be smartened up and had playbook in the offseason, maybe we'd have opportunity to talk about it later. And in a similar subject, I have a gut feeling Ed Reed might be here next year, along with Israel Adonijay. Interesting. That's not a bad thought. It that could possibly happen. Ed Reed is one of those guys that's been a part of that Bill Belichick Mutual Admiration Society. So, Yeah, that I don't think I'd be stunned to see that. Back to the game. What are the chances Houston's players wear Letterman jackets getting off the bus this week? Well, I think we're kind of past the initial shock on that one, though, Tim. So if they want to wear the Letterman jackets, by all means. I want to see Brady come out playing the same pace as he did against Denver early in the season. Houston couldn't handle the no-huddle last time. Now let's ramp it up even faster. Yeah, good point. Yeah, good point. I do believe that that has to be at least in the thought process. Yeah, got to be. Absolutely got to be. Only because if it worked before, it's ridiculous to think that, you know, if it worked before, you got to at least try it, right? Until they stop it. What if it works again? You never know until you snap the football. Michael. You are correct that the health issue is a key item. Considering that last year during the year, the Giants had quite a few injuries, but late in the year, they were healthy and went on a run. As for the depth issue, football involves a large amount of attrition, so players 22 through 53 on a roster are important. Sort of like second and third string players in basketball. These players also rotate in and keep the first string players fresh. You know, there's no question about that. And I think that's where the Patriots have the advantage over Houston, without question. You know, you can put Houston starting 22 up there, I think, with just about any starting unit in the league. But depth? Well, I think that's why Houston has partially had some of the problems that they have had over the course of the last 5 weeks of the season. I mean, certainly stands to reason, doesn't it? Let's see, what else we got here? Wow. Now the computer's decided to just kind of... Okay, well, whatever. I thought I had one more email. Oh, here we go. Ross in Canada says, JR and Escal, hoping to hear your thoughts. More important to success on offense and defense this weekend, Mayo or McCourty? Welker or Gronkowski? Good thought-provoking choices. I'm going to say defensively Mayo, and I think it's because we know that Houston, as I suggested earlier in the program, Houston, I think, is going to tend to lean on Arian Foster quite a bit and make this offense go. And because it's the middle linebacker's job, largely, to, you know, make sure that the run defense is stout enough, and because Mayo has, you know, in a relationship with Foster in the past, knows what he's going to get, or should know what he's going to get from a guy like Arian Foster, then I'm going to say that it's going to be up to Mayo to lead the way to make sure that he doesn't find any running room. I would probably put Vince Wilfork maybe in there over Devin McCourty as well. And then as far as Welker or Gronkowski, more important, I'm going to put Gronk, only because I think, here we go again, we're going to soft sell Wes Welker. I think Welker's going to manage to kind of get his, but I think the Patriots, because Houston didn't see Rob Gronkowski in the first game because he was out with the broken arm, I'm going to have to say that Gronk has got a bigger chance to make a bigger impact. And I'm not so sure that Houston has enough bodies to defend both he and Aaron Hernandez when they're on the field at the same time. And I think this is the X factor on offense that Houston's going to find on their defense that's just going to be tough to handle. Be interesting to see how many snaps both Gronk and Hernandez are on the field at the same time. And whether or not the Patriots decide to target the two big tight ends and the Texans decide to choose their poison, so to speak. Now, my guess is they'll put plenty of attention on Gronk. So that may be where Welker has another big day. But at least right now, I'm going to put Gronk out there just because he will be a focal point, I think, for Houston. And he says, early prediction, Patriots 27, Texans 17. All right. Thanks for that, Ross. We'll get, of course, into predictions more so on Thursday's program. Do we want to take a break before we get to... Yeah? Okay, good. All right, let's do that. All right, so let's get a break in here. And then coming up, Mark Vandermeer, the play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, at Texans Voice, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Well, he's coming up in the playbook.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is your Bridgestone Tire headquarters in New England. We have thousands of quality Bridgestone tires in stock at great prices. Save big on such tires as the Bridgestone Dueler HL Alenza, Turanza EL400, the Dueler HT and AT, and the Potenza G019 Grid. And if you're looking for a quality tire to get you through the winter, we have Bridgestone Blizzak tires in stock right now. We have Bridgestone tires in stock no matter what you drive. Remember that we are New England's headquarters for top flight maintenance, with over 100 ASE certified master technicians on our staff, utilizing state-of-the-art diagnostic equipment. Plus, you'll find easy online appointments, comfortable waiting areas with free Wi-Fi, free shuttle service, over 65 locations across New England, and the best customer service in the industry. Check out our everyday low prices now on Bridgestone tires and make your appointment today at SullivanTire.com. We're always here to get you there.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Ah, that is the unmistakable scent of smoked sausage in this Dunkin' Donuts breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, you mentioned that 4 whiffs ago.
True smoked sausage deliciousness must be treasured.
Hurry in today for the unmistakable taste of a smoked sausage breakfast sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. It's deliciously irresistible. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Stop by Dunkin' Donuts and get a freshly brewed coffee. America runs on Dunkin'.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
In the playbook again for a Wednesday, I'm John Rook. Follow me on Twitter at JR Broadcaster and follow this guy on Twitter at Texans Voice. Voice of the Houston Texans, Mark Vandermeer. I just saw that you tweeted out, only if I'm serving clam chowder. So I don't know how I'm going to get that to you over the phone, but I'd be happy to oblige.
You know, it's the thought that counts, John, really, because I really enjoy the stuff, and I kind of miss it from being up there. So maybe I'll grab some of the press box.
I hope that you do. I'm sure that – make sure you get here early enough because the line forms early for the New England clam chowder around
here.
Yeah,
I was scraping the bottom of the barrel, and it was about 30 minutes before kickoff.
Well, that's because you got to get up there early like all the writers do because they don't have anything else better to do than to eat.
You know what blows me away about that? The writers – will eat before the game, and then at the half, they'll line up as if, you know, it's like a Russian food line from the 80s, you know? Like they haven't had food in weeks, and they must have a hot dog or something.
Oh, a Russian food line. I like that. That's good. That's a line. I may have to steal that one. Good one. You're absolutely right about that. It's kind of like, wow, I've never understood that. You'd think that they got enough before the game, and then at halftime, the line's even worse.
You know, it's an hour later. I really need to eat badly.
Well, so the way some of these guys are paid, that's probably why they eat here, because they need to eat for 2 or 3 days, you know? Part of the problem, I guess, around here. All right, Mark Vandermeer again, who, you know, plied his trade at one time as the voice of the UMass Minutemen, has been in Houston since the inception of the franchise. And I'll wager that you did not think you would be back this way again this year, did you?
Well, I thought there was a chance, to be honest with you, because I knew that night was trouble.
that night when they got drilled by the Patriots, I thought, okay, they've got multiple opportunities to make it back, to get that number one seed, but I knew they needed help, okay? And they got help in the form of the 49ers a week later, and the Texans bounced back with a victory a week later themselves against the Colts, but, you know, they just couldn't come back from that game. I mean, they couldn't beat Minnesota. They had trouble with the Colts on the road, lost that one, and here they are. You know, they lost their number one seed, had to hit the road in the second round, the divisional round for the playoffs. And, you know, also, John, I think that in a bizarre kind of, I'm going to call it almost twisted way, maybe they, you know, just needed to do it this way. You know, if they're going to go where they want to go, maybe they just had to right that wrong. And, you know, maybe that's just poetic and I'm just writing prose here or whatever. But I just think that there's an opportunity here for them because they still have a horrible taste in their mouths over what went down last night, how they handled the situation. Obviously not very well being an AFC favorite. They have to remedy this somehow, for not just for this year, but for the future, because they hope to be in that position again.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, before we'll kind of lead into that, I won't work into that a little bit, starting with what happened here back in early December. And from that point in time, Matt Schaub doesn't seem to be the same guy. Is he hurt? Is there something wrong with him? Just because statistically speaking, he's nowhere near the quarterback he was earlier in the season.
Yeah, he's not. And you look at the numbers for the entire season, it's another 4,000-yard year for him. He has three in his career now. And, you know, the numbers look pretty good overall. But you're right. When you just take the last 4 weeks of the regular season, they're not so hot, and he's not throwing as many touchdown passes. And then they bounce back with a win over Cincinnati in the playoffs, and it wasn't a great statistical game either. He did complete, you know, 76% of his passes. That was nice. He did throw the pick six, which was not nice, but he bounced back well from that, I thought. He bounced back to play a solid game, and they moved the sticks. They were good on third down. They were not good in the red zone. They were 1-for-4. But you know what? The whole mantra against Cincinnati was don't turn the ball over. They have a very good defense. They have a good secondary. Don't force things in there. And even though he did throw the pick six, that was relatively early, and he settled down to play a good game. Now he's got to take it to another level on the road, and it's going to be extremely difficult, obviously, against the Patriots.
Well, you know, and he obviously is going to have a huge assist from a guy like Arian Foster, who was limited somewhat, and I would say that he's probably limited as well as anybody limited him this year in that game back in December. Clearly, though, Houston does what they do best by giving him the ball, maybe reacting him off of play action. And this last week against Cincinnati, we saw, you know, Schaub flip the ball out to him as well. So what else should the Patriots really be concerned with, and what can the Texans throw at New England maybe other than throwing number 23 into the mix?
Well, he is the mix. You know, it all revolves around him and their ability to run and open up holes with that zone blocking scheme. Now, what they did not have last time was Derek Newton, their starting right tackle, who's a massive individual who should certainly help. I mean, the guy they started is Ryan Harris, and they picked him up off the street early in the season because they had injuries on the O-line. And the other thing they didn't have was Garrett Graham. Now, I'm going to watch practice today and hope that Garrett Graham can go. He just got hit in the head hard on Saturday, against the Bengals late in the game. The final reception of the game, as a matter of fact, a first down catch. And it would be great if he could go because he couldn't go last time. And they like to run a lot of three tight end sets. They were not able to do it last time. So if he can go, they can do all of that. And they have their starting right tackle. And I think that's really going to help them out on the offensive side of the ball. Even if Graham can't go, having Newton back is good because they can still run some of that three tight end stuff with Brian Harris, a backup tackle, coming in. Obviously, he does not fool anybody that he might go out for a pass, but they'll have to take it and live with it.
Now, that would be an interesting twist because one of the things it sounds like you'd be kind of doing to the Patriots, what the Patriots are trying to do to their opposing defenses by throwing those tight ends with some versatility in there, which I think is a unique idea. And one of the things that we've been talking about, Mark, is all right, what kind of something. What kind of curveball does Houston have in his offensive repertoire that could actually catch the Patriots by surprise? Now, you know, obviously we realize we're not going to get any, you know, company secrets here, but at the same time, Houston does come out and try to get you to stop what they do best. And I'm thinking in a game like this, considering what happened 5 weeks ago, that Houston's best chance here is to catch the Patriots off guard.
Yeah, and to get off to a good start, because they're certainly capable of doing it. This offense can move the ball, and what they do is they throw curveballs all the time, because what's happening is teams gear up to stop the run. They get play action going. They get these these bootleg plays going, and they get a lot of big plays off of those. They have this season, and they have historically under Gary Kubiak. So if they can hit on a couple of pass plays early, kind of flex the defense and start to get something going on the ground and obviously play clean. I mean, they can't turn it over and expect to win the football game. You know, and everyone here is talking about red zone. Yes, certainly you have to score touchdowns, not field goals against the Patriots. But I think that, you know, as long as you get the ball down there and get something out of these drives and don't turn it over, I'm not going to say that, you know, I guarantee victory or anything, but I know the game's going to be a lot closer. I know they can be in the game in the fourth quarter. And again, they made mistakes on defense last time. We'll get to that side of the football. But, you know, I believe this offense can move the football. They just have to not screw it up themselves. Penalty on the first play of the game, turnover, not catching a pass down the right sideline early that would have made a big difference in that contest, or at least it kept them in the game a little bit longer, if nothing else.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that assessment. Mark Vandermeer, the radio play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, joining us here in the playbook. Let's flip it to the other side. And while I know Houston is like a lot of other teams, seem to have been, you know, they've had their share of attrition, especially in the linebacking core. You guys didn't have the opportunity, if you call it that, to face Rob Gronkowski the last time because he was just recently hurt. And we fully expect Rob to be, you know, in the lineup. I don't know if he'll be 100%. But at the same time, he certainly got to, give your defenders a chance to consider his presence on the field, does he not?
Yeah, it's a nightmare. You know, Glover Quinn, starting safety for the Texans, did a nice job on Jermaine Gresham last week. Mm-hmm. So that was good. And I think Quinn is capable of at least slowing down one of the tight ends, but you have two of them to worry about. And that obviously becomes a matchup nightmare for opponents, and I don't need to remind Patriots fans of that. I think one thing playing into the Texans, I'm not going to call it favor, but it's a plus for them relative to last time, is that Brooks Reed is back at outside linebacker, and he's a starter, and he's got 4.5 sacks in 3 career postseason games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he tends to rise to the occasion. He had 2.5 sacks against Flacco in the playoff game last year on the road for the Texans that they lost, of course, but they were all over Flacco in that game. They had 5 sacks on him. Watt had 2.5. They just couldn't get the ball out. They couldn't get turnovers in that game, and that's a huge reason why they lost it. They threw 3 picks with the backup quarterback, T.J. Yates. So yeah. I know this is a totally different situation, but we knew what that Ravens team did to the Patriots. I think that if you're able to get Watt, you know, Watt was in the backfield a lot against Brady, unable to sack him, but he made bodily contact. He's got to somehow get there faster. Reed has to help out. Other people have to step up. If you get a little bit of pressure on him and you force those 3 outs, you know, they had 4 consecutive, not 3 and outs, but stops on the Patriots, which was nice in the middle of the game, but the offense could never pick up the slack. If you can get those stops earlier, offense can get off to a decent start. You know, again, you make it more of a four-quarter game, and maybe you can make a play at the end and try to steal it.
Well, I know that the tennis rackets are out again this week to sort of simulate, you know, J.J. Watt's reach and some of the speed as well. But, you know, clearly the chess match is going to lie here, as you mentioned, the quickness and being able to get to Brady versus Brady's ability to get rid of the football and to have the targets like Welker, Hernandez, Gronkowski, Woodhead, name them. I mean, he's got a lot of targets that are there. That puts a huge amount of pressure on the linebacking core in particular.
You know, it's funny because I do a lot of shows with Ted Johnson, the former Patriot linebacker
right, sure,
here in Houston, and yeah. He does a great job for us. And, you know, he knows Tom and everything, played with Drew Bledsoe as well. And he said, the thing about Brady is, you know, you better be able to pressure up the middle, because if you pressure from the edges, he's just going to step up in the pocket and make a play.
Right.
So you have to find a way to pressure up the middle, and that's what Watt can possibly do here. So, you know, even if you double him, maybe Antonio Smith can get there on a few occasions. And again, Brady's going to get his. It's like playing a great basketball player. They're going to score some points, you know, and you just cannot hang your head if that occurs. You just have to hope you make enough stops and keep your offense, you know, get your offense on the field as quickly as you possibly can and hope that they're doing their job. It's an all-phases kind of thing here if you're going to upset the Patriots in Foxborough.
So you feel then, Mark, in sort of a nutshell, that really this boils down, Houston's chances boil down to your offense being able to score enough to keep up with what the Patriots are able to do?
Well, you know, this offense, I've seen it light things up. They're capable of that. I don't think they want to get into one of these, you know, 34-31 kind of games. I think it takes 27-28 points, and they can do it. But, you know, that's easier said than done, the way they haven't been scoring lately. I think it's all about the running game. You know, and again, I'm going to go back to Matt Schaub, not necessarily making huge plays, but make the key third down passes. You know, we all talk about hand the ball off to Arian Foster and, you know, you get success. Well, you're going to be in third and five. It's just inevitable. You're going to get there. Now it's up to the quarterback to make those third down conversion throws. If you can go 50% or better on third downs and you're getting some ground yardage, well, then I like the chances a whole lot better because they can lead in the category of time of possession, and if they get enough third down stops themselves on defense, if, of course, you know, they'll have a chance to pull this game out.
Yeah.
They're capable of it, John. It's just a matter of, you know, are they going to do it? Are they not going to make the big mistake this time?
I agree with you. I think time of possession is a huge key to this game on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. The Texans are the number one team in the league in that category. And, you know, I know the Patriots aren't as highly ranked in that because they're, what, 11th in the National Football League?
Yeah, right.
Well, because they score fast.
And they go up-tempo and everything. But I think that you're right. If Houston is able to control the clock and not let the game get away from them, I do expect the Patriots to come out and go up-tempo. Not necessarily hurry up, but I expect them to come out up-tempo in an effort to control and manage the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, times the Texans have been able to beat Peyton Manning, they were able to run the football and just make enough stops. You know, Manning got some scores, got some drives going. But they were able to make enough stops and control the clock on their end. So, look, it's a tall order. There's no question about it. You know, I like the intangibles in that when you're a team, and you feel it as a member of the media, right? When you're playing an opponent, when your team is playing an opponent that it's supposed to beat, you start building up a case for the opponent to win. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And now I'm on the other end here. We've had games like that this year, games like that in the last couple of years. Now I'm on the other end where you're building a case for them, for your own team to win. You know, and it's a different kind of feeling when you're an overwhelming favorite or an overwhelming underdog. And look, stranger things have happened, and the Texans are going to have to find a way to make history here.
All right. Well, listen, we'll keep the chowder warm for you, and I'll make sure that everybody understands that you may be a little late, but there's got to be a cup left over for Big Mark.
Yeah, please. Okay. Tell the writers to go
back off
on that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Safe travels up here. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Mark. You bet. Thank you. Mark Vandermeer, who is the radio play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, joining us here in the playbook. All right, before we wrap this thing up, I wanted you to listen in to Bill Belichick's remarks this week in particular. Today, what he had to say, if you haven't had a chance to hear what Coach had to say to the media earlier this afternoon, he was actually pretty engaging, had a couple of witty things to say. Not that he doesn't necessarily, but he just seemed to be loose and relaxed and a little bit un-Belichickian, if you will. And sometimes these opportunities are rare, so we're going to get to some of that. And if we have time for the top of the hour, a bit of Tom Brady as well right here in the playbook.
We're rolling into the end of the week here. You know, obviously the Texans are a real good football team. We have a lot of respect for you know, Gary's coaching staff, job they've done down there. Excellent game for them last week against Cincinnati. Thought they were really played well in all three phases of the game. And, you know, we know it's going to be a big challenge for us on Sunday. I think the Texans do just pretty much everything well. They run the ball. They can stop the run. They can throw it. They can play pass defense, rush the passer, good in a kicking game. Well coached, sound, a lot of good football players, very talented team. So we know we're going to need to play our best game, and hopefully that's where we'll be able to be by Sunday.
Bill, what are some of the unique challenges you have preparing for a team that you played so recently?
You know, it comes up quite a bit. We play teams in the division twice every year, so it's not really that big of a deal.
How would you describe Arian Foster's running style?
Good.
Fast.
Yeah, he's fast. Sure. He's fast. Got good vision. You know, he breaks tackles. He makes people miss. He outruns them. He's good in the passing game. He's pretty much good at everything.
Patience. Where does his patience come in?
Good. Finds the holes. They got good backs. Tate's good back. I mean, they got good backs.
Hey, Bill, when you're playing a running back like Arian Foster, is it hard to simulate what he does in practice for a scouting team in terms of the patience and the ability to create?
I think our backs do a good job of that. I think our backs, you know, feel like we have good backs, and they do a good job. You know, Shane, Woody, Steven, Brandon Bolden, all of them. And those guys have good vision. They can They can run. I mean, they're different than Foster, but it's, you know, it's close enough. Certainly good enough for you know, our defense to work against. Those guys make good cuts. They see holes well. I think our backs do a good job giving us a look on the scout team, the running game. Yeah. So I think it's harder, actually, to simulate to get all the offensive linemen. No matter who you play, it's usually harder to get them to get the blocking schemes kind of exactly the way the other team does it. It's probably easier for the runner than it is the overall blocking patterns, depending on how each team does it during the week, you know, trying to get all those guys coordinated.
Bill, when you consider the finality, obviously, of a playoff game where one mistake can send you home, is it important to amplify that for the players to say this is things that will end quickly if you make a mistake, but make sure that they're still aggressive enough and not afraid to step up and make a play?
That's exactly where we are. So, yeah. Yeah, that's where we all understand that. I mean, every player, every coach, everybody that participates in the game, we all understand that's exactly what it is.
Is there a way to emphasize that they still have to go out and play and not play so conservatively?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, that's, you know, you don't win a war by digging a foxhole and sitting in it. You got to go out there and attack. You got to go out there and make the plays you need to make to win. But it's a one-game season.
Bill, we talked already this week about how Week 14 doesn't matter, but at the same time, could you sort of approach the balance between using it as a reference and a tool to learn on and coach from, but also being able to turn the page to this week because it's really a new season?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's another game we look at, like the Indianapolis game, like the Minnesota game, like the other Indianapolis game, like the Cincinnati game. You know, look at all those games, and there are things we can learn from in each of them. And we need to be ready for whatever we're going to get this week. It won't be the same as any of those games, but we can learn from all those.
When you guys moved to such a tight end heavy offense, was that a function of having drafted two great ones and needing to get them both on the field together, or was it, did it happen the other way?
I think you always try to get the players on the field that you feel like are your most productive players, or the players that you can put together as a group that will best attack the opponent that you're playing. So it's a combination of those things.
Tom has been a starting quarterback for 16 playoff wins. Obviously those are Patriots wins, not Tom Brady wins, but he's a big part of them. What do you see from him on a daily basis that has led to that success?
I think Tom's one of our most consistent players. He has been through the years in terms of his preparation and his performance. So he's won a lot of regular season games, won a lot of playoff games. I think he's a pretty consistent player all the way through. What he does on a day-to-day basis, how he performs on the practice field, how he performs in games, whether they're preseason, regular season, postseason, whatever it is, he's pretty consistent. And I think you see that during the week. So it shows up on Sunday.
Bill, last time you guys played these guys, you mentioned after the game that one of the keys to sort of slowing down their rush wasn't just blocking well, but getting off of man coverage quickly and beating guys in the routes early. Is that something you guys are expecting again? You know, a lot of man coverage, and is that something you're keying on this week, beating it?
Yeah, always. I mean, anytime you can't get away from man-to-man coverage, that puts a lot of pressure on your pass protection and you know, getting the ball off. So Houston's a good man-to-man team, and they play man-to-man coverage. If that's what they play against us, then we'll have to beat it. If they don't, then we'll have to beat zone coverage, meaning we'll have to have good spacing from our receivers and, you know, be able to find open areas and all that. But they're a good man-to-man team. They play quite a bit of it. They won 13 games. I mean, I'm sure we'll see plenty of man coverage on Sunday.
Well, when you kind
of, and then, you know, of course, catching the ball is also important. You know, we dropped five passes in the first game, so doesn't matter whether you're open or not. If you don't catch the ball, then you don't have anything to show for it.
Bill, when you've seen or you had a degree of success like you did back on December 10th, what is the fine line between trying to repeat what you did so well because it worked well and trying to throw in new wrinkles?
Well, I think it's about creating a game plan that you feel like can be successful against the team that you're playing. And the way certain plays matched up in the first game First of all, I don't even know if we're going to run the same plays or they're going to run the same plays, so that it could even possibly match up in this game. But even if it did, the chances of it matched up, you know, the number of plays that we run, the number of defenses they have, for it to be the exact same is infinitesimal. It's not going to happen. So I don't think that's really important. It's about being prepared to deal with whatever it is we have to deal with on Sunday and going out there and executing it well. It's not trying to replicate a matchup. I mean, you can't do it.
Bill, in taking stock of your team self right now, how important was that bye week? And when you look at your players in total, who did that really benefit the most in your estimation, any group of players in particular?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a hypothetical question. I have no idea. I know if we'd had to play last week, we would have got ready to play, and we would have played last week. We didn't, so we're playing this week, so we'll get ready to go and try to play the best we can this week. That's all we can do. We can't control the schedule or how anybody's feeling or what days we play or what days we don't play. When they schedule them, we show up, do the best we can. That's what we're going to do this week.
Giving them 3 days off, was it your intention just to get them away from the game, let them quiet their minds, quiet their bodies, or a combination of both?
Well, I mean, again, we worked on some things last week, but I felt like the most productive thing we could do was, as a staff, to make sure that we're ready for the players when they come back in, and we give them a scouting report and game plan on the next team that we were going to play, and we needed some time to do that. I mean, we could have just kept working on basically three opponents, but, you know, we tried to set it up in such a way that when the players came back in, we'd be totally prepared for whichever one it was. So that's what we did.
For a few years, the Texans always seemed to be that team that was kind of on the cusp of making the postseason. And now, having been in that, or been in the playoffs here back-to-back years, I'm kind of curious as to your impression of how Coach Kubiak's kind of put them in that position, and then kind of just what it takes to be a consistent playoff team year in and year out.
Well, it definitely takes good talent, and they have plenty of that, and they're well coached. So, you know, we played them down there in 09. I mean, they had a good football team that year. They beat us. They played well. You know, we haven't played them since then, right? Is that 09 or 10, whatever year it was, whenever we were down there. So that's, you know, we've seen them. They've looked pretty good. And he's done a good job. They've, you know, like you said, they've been in playoffs the last 2 years. Lost their quarterback the end of the year last year, still won a playoff game. You know, won 12 regular season games this year, won a playoff game already. So, yeah, they've done a pretty solid job. Starts with good players. They have plenty of those, but they play well. Coaches get them to play well, so they're pretty solid.
Bill, what does Garrett Graham coming back to the Texans add to that? It looks like he helps in the run game and in the pass game.
All right, well, he's, you know, more of a tight end, so it gives them some two tight end formations. But with Casey in there, Casey can play tight end and fullback too, so they didn't have him in the first game. I think they used Casey in a role similar to some of the things that we would have had Graham do, and he did. When they've had all three, of course, it gives them the ability to put all three guys on the field at the same time, which they don't have when they only have two of them. But when there's only two of them out there, I think that they try to manage the game with Casey doing what Graham would be doing. But Graham's a good player, good red area player, good receiver. Casey's a good player. Owen Daniels is a good player. So they have three good tight ends, whichever ones of them are out there. And if all three of them are out there, then they got three good guys out there. And if only two of them are out there, then usually that means that they have two good receivers out there with Walter and Andre Johnson. So, you know, whichever guys they put out there, that'd be a challenge for us to defend, no matter who it is.
Has forced a lot of fumbles, but also recovered a lot of those fumbles. Is there how do you see the balance between skill in getting on the ball versus kind of getting the bounce in terms of recovering fumbles?
Well, it's taking advantage of your opportunities, and if you have an opportunity to get it, then you need to get it. You know, like you said, sometimes it just you just don't really have an opportunity for it. But the ones that we do, we practice them, and hopefully when we get the opportunity, we can capitalize and make those count. It's no different than defensive backs getting their hands on balls and knocking them down versus intercepting them. It's the same type of thing. Those are opportunities. You only get so many of them on defense. You need to capitalize on whichever ones you get.
Playing another team again. Some of your guys have said, you know, whatever worked last time,
there's going to be different wrinkles. Nothing's going to carry over. I mean, do you almost have to assume that that's going to be the case? I mean, have you seen it where stuff that worked before can carry over, or do you have to assume it the other way?
Well, I think there's a game plan wise, you can fundamentally take a similar approach if you think a certain type of play or a certain scheme or a certain style would be successful. Doesn't mean you can't continue to do that. Maybe it is formatted a little bit differently, or there's some modifications to it, or whatever it is. But as far as specific plays and, you know, this game's going to go the way that game went, I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, just show me one example where that's happened. I can't think of one.
Have you ever seen an example in a playoff game where, you know, you talk about matchups and what talent certain teams have, but have you ever seen an example where a team that was doing one thing during the regular season switched completely what they were doing for a playoff game? And is that dangerous for any team to do?
Well, I mean, if you go back to I'm not saying this is right or wrong, okay? I'm just telling you, asked the historical question, so I can give you a historical answer. I can tell you that in 1990, when I was with the Giants, we played Chicago in the first playoff game. We played a 4-3 defense. They had a certain style of play that we felt was more conducive to that. The next week, we played San Francisco. We played a 3-4 defense, and that was predicated on what we thought would be best for us to play the 49ers that week. And then the following week, we played Buffalo, and we played a 2-4 nickel, 3-3 nickel, whatever you want to call it, depending on what part of the game you were in. And I would say that was a different style of defense. So is that trying to be creative? I don't know. It's trying to win the game. It's trying to do what you felt like you had to do to match up against those particular teams, Chicago, San Francisco, and Buffalo, in those that particular year, that were very, very different. Playing Chicago wasn't like playing San Francisco, and playing San Francisco wasn't playing like playing Buffalo. There were just different matchups, different style offense, different personnel groups on the field. So, you know, I think you do, at this time of season, you do what you need to do to win one game. You don't worry about your system. You don't worry about playing time or how many guys do this or this guy does that. You worry about what do you need to do to win a game. That's what we're here for. So, put the best you have out there to do the best you can against whatever it is you're facing, offensively, defensively, whatever it is, and then you try to make that work. And sometimes that means it's the same thing. Sometimes it's doing what you've been doing. Sometimes it might be doing something differently. And I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I'm just saying that's what happened in that particular year. And had we played somebody other than Chicago, San Francisco, or Buffalo, I'm sure you'd be looking at a whole different, you know, bunch of different chapters in a book. But we didn't. That's the way it was. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's the right thing or the wrong thing to do, but that's what we did. Okay. Thanks.
Hello. Shoot away.
After the last game against the Texans, I think you kind of talked about having a chip on your shoulder and a little too much talk about the Texans leading up to that game. Just kind of gave you an opportunity to expound on the Patriots right now.
I mean, obviously, we're still trying to, you know, those guys have won a playoff game. We're 0-0, so I guess that's our chip. And we're trying to, you know, we know a hungry Texan team is going to come in here ready to play. You know, I'm sure those guys have been talking all week about, you know, how they want to play this game. And we know the last game could have been a lot closer than what it was. You know, there were plays in the game that it just kind of bounced our way. So we know this is a good team coming in. We have to be prepared and ready to go.
Is the defense better? I mean, statistically, it got better in the last month of the season. Is it better now than it was at the start of the year?
Obviously, when you get a group of guys together for an extended period of time, you're going to get better. But there are also things that we have to improve at, especially communication, getting on the same page, and doing things like that. But, you know, overall, that's probably a question you got to ask Coach Belichick. I'm not really sure. Nope, one at a time.
No. Every running back needs good blocking to really be successful, no matter how good you are. But there are some that, when the holes aren't there, they can create their own opportunities. You talk about Arian Foster's ability to be able to create his own opportunities and what that does to him.
You know, Arian's great. You know, he makes a lot of cuts where he makes the offensive line look good, but they're also a good offensive line as well. But he's such a patient runner. You know, I like to, you know, liken his running style to water. You know, he's not that guy that's going to, you know, stick real hard. He's just going to be patient until the hole develops, and, you know, he makes the whole team better.
How much did the big lead last time affect their running game plan, do you think? Or was it just a matter of you guys executed your defensive game plan against him and holding the, like, 45 yards?
Well, obviously they started off the game with two big runs. I think one of them was called back on a penalty, but you know, they did an excellent job, but when you're playing catch-up, it kind of makes the team one-dimensional. I think that's what kind of happened in that game.
How do you raise your edge? How do you raise your edge from the end of the season through the bye week to this week?
Well, obviously, you know, you have to talk about it, but I think the guys know. I think the sense of urgency is there. You know, we have a young team, but guys have been playing a lot of games, and the coaches are doing an excellent job making sure everyone knows. You know, you're one play away from being at home, and I think guys are ready to go.
A lot of fumbles, but you've also recovered a lot of those fumbles. Is there a skill to getting on the ball, or is it a matter of, like you talked about, the ball bouncing?
You know, obviously we practice these things every day. You know, going against a great offense, we practice getting the balls up. But like you said, it is tough, you know, recovering those fumbles. I think guys like Vince Wilfork and Rob Ninkovich, I think those guys have five apiece. They have a special knack at getting on the ball and have been doing a good job all year.
John, what's the challenges of going against an offense that you guys faced just a couple weeks ago?
Well, obviously, you know, they know what we're going to do, but we also know them as well. You know, I'm sure there'll be a couple of different wrinkles, but the personnel is pretty much the same from the last time we played them. They have a couple of guys coming back. But, you know, we know each other. It's kind of like a division game. You know, you play a team twice in a couple of weeks. So.
In what way do you think Arian's game has grown since college?
I mean, I've always thought highly of Arian as a running back. You know, obviously now you guys get to see what he can do. I went against him, you know, every day one-on-one. So, you know, I think he's always been a good player. I mean, he's probably more patient now. I mean, he's lost a couple pounds. He might have been a little heavier in college. But, you know, he's faster now as well. He's doing a lot of different things. He's catching the ball well out of the backfield. It's just an overall good running back.
I guess he said he modeled his work ethic after you. Did you know that?
Well, to be honest with you, like when we first came into school, we weren't – I mean, it wasn't just like, you know, we're here, rookies, we're best friends. What happened was, you know, he was always at the facility late, and I was always at the facility late. So it was kind of like, well, we're both here at 8 o'clock at night, like, might as well work together. So it's kind of
right. Gerard, what do you see from Matt Schaub?
I see a guy who's throwing the ball well. You know, the play action is great. He can throw the ball deep. He has a lot of weapons on the outside and also the inside. He's throwing the ball well, making all the checks at the line of scrimmage. Great with recognizing what the defense is doing. He's playing well for him.
Tracking has struggled a little bit late in the season. What have you seen differently from him maybe the last four or five games than you saw from the
running back? Well, to me, he's still making all the throws. You know, I can't really sit here and say, you know, he's doing that much of, you know, that much different than the early part of the season. The play action game's still going. You know, guys are just, I guess, making plays on the defensive side of the ball on some of those balls, but he's making all the throws.
When he is on like he was early in the year, what is he capable of?
Oh, he's tough. You know, anytime that team is two-dimensional, anytime they have the running game going, then the play action opens up. They like to take a lot of shots down the field. They can eat up yards very fast.
Gerard, do you almost have to forget about that last game?
Oh, definitely. You know, that's not even in our mind, to be honest with you. Obviously, you have to watch the film to see what happened, see what plays hurt us. We still were hurting some of those plays, and we still had people running, you know, free down the field that were, you know, could have been big plays. But you have to take some of those plays. But at the same time, you have to be ready to know that this is the playoffs. It's different, you know, one play away from being at home.
What has it been like working with Ninkovich? I mean, he's at a new position, but it's already does a lot of the same things. But how has he improved from last year?
I mean, he's an overall smarter player. He's doing a lot of different things as far as, you know, the communication aspect. He's getting guys lined up. He's helping with that. He's always been a good pass rusher. You know, I'm not a overall great evaluator. You know, that's another question you got to ask Coach Belichick. But he's really helped us this year. You know, the sacks, the strips, the fumble recoveries, things like that.
What younger guys brought to this defense, Chandler and
Hightower? Some great dances. No, but, you know, those guys really bring a lot of energy. Those guys are hungry. You know, those guys have really, you know, kind of fit in very well. You know, they came in trying to learn as much as they could. I always talk about when I came in as a rookie trying to be a sponge and learn as much as I could, and those guys have done the same.
How is Brandon?
Oh, man. He's one of the first guys here and one of the last to leave, you know, and as you can see on the field, it's really paying his dividends. So.
Specifically, what has Chandler done from the beginning of the year to now where he's made improvement?
Well, when he's healthy, I mean, he can rush the pass. He's a long guy. He's doing a lot of different things. The coaches, as the season goes on, they start to place more on these rookies, and I think he's doing a good job handling that.
With a victory, Tom Brady would become the all-time winningest starting quarterback in playoff history. I'm just curious, from your experience around him, what do you see that doesn't make you surprised to hear that?
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's in early and out late as well. You know, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback and still putting in the work, putting in those long hours. So.
What about how he raises his level of play in the postseason?
I mean, it's a joy to watch on the sideline anytime we're able to catch our breath and he's moving the ball down the field and that offense is at work. You know, he gets better as the game goes on once he figures out a defense and he does a good job.
Is it important to understand you have to play conservatively at some points in these playoff games because it is a one-game season, but still take the risks when a play is there?
Definitely. You know, and those are calculated risks that you have to take. You know, especially I think the biggest thing for us is third down, getting off the field and getting that ball back in our offense's hands. All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2